couldn't. The first edge of nausea hit me, and I knew it was blood loss. I touched my neck and found that blood was still seeping from the puncture wounds. That shouldn't have been happening, should it? I never donated blood voluntarily. I didn't know how long the wound should bleed. I tried to lift with my arms like doing a push-up, and the world swam in streams of colors. Dizziness threatened to engulf the world. I did the only thing I could think of. I screamed. Chapter 14. The door opened and it was Jason. I don't think I'd ever been so happy to see him. I managed to say, "Help me." My voice sounded weak and scared, and I hated it. But I was also feeling nauseous and dizzy, and that wasn't post-coital languor. It was blood loss. Now that I could see again, I realized I was drenched in blood and other things. But it was mainly the blood that was worrying me, because it was all mine. Jason rolled Asher off of me. He moved with that boneless ease that only a truly dead body has. I don't know what the difference between a sleep and death is, but you know instantly when you move even an arm, whether it's death or whether it's sleep. Asher lay there on his back, his hair spilled around his face like a halo. Crimson blood glittered on his chin, his neck, his upper chest. The scars didn't take away from the beauty of him nude. They weren't the first thing you noticed, or even the third. He lay drenched in my blood, like some fallen god come down to death at last. Even sick from loss of blood, I could not find him anything but beautiful. What the fuck was wrong with me? Jason had to help me slide off Jean-Claude, catching me in his arms, holding me like you hold a child. I was nude. He'd just dragged me from a bed where I obviously had sex with two men, yet Jason hadn't made a single quip or joke. When Jason had this much ammunition but didn't tease, things were bad. I laid my head against Jason's shoulder, and that helped the dizziness, made the world a little less shaky. He started to turn me away from the bed, but I said, "No, wait, not yet." He stopped moving. "What?" "I want to remember this." "What?" he asked again. "The way they looked together." They both lay on their backs, but whereas Asher looked like some fallen death god, Jean-Claude looked like a god of a different kind. His thick black hair lay in a heavy mass around his head, carelessly arranged like a dark frame for that pale, pale face. His lips were half-parted, his lashes thick as lace upon his cheeks. He lay as if he had fallen asleep after some great passion, one hand across his stomach, the other at his side, one knee bent, so that he seemed almost displayed. Only Jean-Claude could die and look this pretty while he did it. "Anita! Anita!" I realized that Jason had been talking for a while. "How much blood did they take?" My voice came out hoarse, my mouth was dry. "Not they, only Asher." He settled me closer in his arms, almost like he was hugging me. His leather jacket creaked as he moved. His bare chest was very warm against my naked skin. He didn't just feed. Jason sounded disapproving, which you didn't hear much. "He got caught up in the moment, I think." He shifted me so that he could free up a hand to touch my forehead, which seemed silly since I was nude. But we often fall into habit when we're stressed. You check someone's temperature on their foreheads, even if they're naked. You don't feel feverish. If anything, you feel a little cool. That made me remember something, and the fact that I'd forgotten said I was feeling worse than I knew. "Is my neck still bleeding?" "A little." "Should it be?" He carried me towards the bathroom. "Have you ever been bitten this badly before?" He opened the door with his knee in one hand and carried me through. "Not without passing out afterwards."
"No."
I frowned. Did I just say no instead of no? "Yep," he said. "Shit," I said. "Yeah," he said. He sat on the edge of the huge black marble tub, balancing me in his lap while he turned on the water. The water spilled out of a silver swan's mouth, which I'd always thought was ostentatious. But hey, it wasn't my bathroom. The nausea had passed. The dizziness was waning. "Down. Put me down." "The marble is cold," he said. I sighed. "I need to find out how well my body's working." "Just try sitting up in my lap without me holding you. If you're okay, I'll fetch towels and you can sit down on them. But trust me, you don't want to sit naked on this marble." "Practical," I said. "Don't tell anyone I actually made sense. It'll ruin my image." I smiled. "Secret's safe with me." I tried sitting up while Jason fidgeted with the water, trying to get the right temperature. I could sit up. Great. I tried to stand, and only Jason's arm around my waist kept me from falling on the marble steps leading down from the bathtub. He tucked me safely back in his lap. Don't try to do so much so fast, Anita. I leaned back against him, his arm like a safety belt around my waist. Why am I so weak? How can you have been around vampires this long and ask me that? I don't let them feed, I said. I do, and trust me, when you've donated this much, it takes a little while to recover. He seemed satisfied with the water temperature at last. He turned the faucets on harder and had to talk louder over the sound of the water. We'll get you cleaned up and see how you feel. I could feel myself frowning, and I wasn't sure exactly why. I felt like I should be angry. I should be something, and I wasn't. Now that I wasn't trapped between Jean-Claude and Asher anymore, I was strangely calm. No, not just calm. I felt good, and I shouldn't have. I frowned harder, trying to chase this wonderful lassitude away. It was like trying to wake from a bad dream when it didn't want to let you go. Except instead of fighting to wake from a nightmare, I was fighting to destroy a good dream. That seemed wrong, too. Everything seemed wrong. I felt, vaguely, like I missed something important, but for the life of me, I couldn't place it. I felt out of sorts and wonderful at the same time. It was as if my natural grumpiness was fighting some warm, happy thought. The warm, happy thought was winning, but I wasn't sure that that was necessarily a good thing. What's wrong with me? I asked. What do you mean? Jason asked. I feel good, and I shouldn't. I feel wonderful. A few minutes ago, I was terrified, dizzy, sick, and scared. But once you got me out of the bed, it all seemed better. Just better? He asked. He was slipping out of his leather jacket, one arm at a time, while he took turns holding me with the other arm. You're right, not just better. Once I wasn't scared, it was wonderful again. I frowned and tried to think and was still having trouble doing it. Why can't I think through this? He rearranged me in his lap so he could unzip his boots and push them off with his feet. It finally hit me that he was undressing himself while still holding me in his lap. Who says that the skills you learn at work don't come in useful in your everyday life? Why are you undressing? You can't move around in the tub without falling down. I'd hate for you to drown in the tub. I tried pushing this wonderful feeling farther away, but it was like trying to fight a warm, comforting mist. You could strike out, but there was nothing solid to hit. The mist just moved and reformed and stayed. Stop, I said. The one word was firm enough, though I didn't feel very firm inside. What? He asked, as he moved me enough forward so that he could unfasten the top of his jeans. This should bother me, you trying to get naked while I'm naked in the tub. That should bother me, right? But it doesn't, does it? He said. He was unbuttoning his buttonfly jeans with one hand. That took talent. No, it doesn't, I said, frowning again. Why doesn't it bother me? You really don't know, do you? He asked. No, I said, not even sure what I was saying no to. He'd gotten his jeans unbuttoned. I can either lay you down on the very cold tile, or I can throw you over my shoulder for a few seconds while I take the pants off. Lady's choice. The decision seemed too hard for me. I don't know. He didn't ask a second time, just tossed me as gently as he could over his shoulder, sort of half a fireman's carry. Being upside down made the world spin again, and I wondered if I was going to be sick all over his back. He balanced me there while he wormed out of his jeans. I was now staring down at his bare back, and as the jeans slid down the top of his butt, the nausea had passed, and I giggled. I never giggle. Nice ass. He choked or laughed. I never knew you noticed. Underwear, I said. What? You had underwear. I caught a glimpse of it. I had this horrible urge to run my hands over his butt, just because it was there, and I could. It was like I was drunk or high. Yeah, I had underwear on. What about it? Can you put it back on? You don't really care if I have underwear on or not, do you? And there was something in his voice that was almost teasing. Nope. I shook my head, which made the world spin again. Oh, God, I think I'm going to be sick. Stop moving, it'll pass. You wouldn't be sick at all if you hadn't fought to get out from between the two of them. Too much physical exertion right afterwards will make you sick as a dog. Sink into the feeling. Just ride it. It feels wonderful. I felt a little silly, talking to his ass, but it didn't seem nearly as silly as it should have. What feels wonderful? Guess, he said. That made me frown. Don't want to guess. God, what's wrong with me? Tell me. Let's just get you in the tub. A bath will help you clear your head. He moved me back to his arms and stepped over the edge of the tub. You're naked, I said. So are you, he said. That had a certain logic to it that I couldn't quite argue with, though I felt I should have argued with it. Weren't you going to put something back on? The underwear is silk. I'm not going to ruin it by wearing it in the tub because you think I should put it on. Besides, you don't really care if I'm naked or not, remember? A headache was beginning just behind one eye. No, I said, but I should care, shouldn't I? I mean... Jason lowered us both into the water. It felt wonderful, so warm, so smooth, so good against my skin. Jason moved me gently in the water until I was sitting in front of him, cradled against his body. The warm water was so warm, and I was so tired. It would feel so good to just sleep. Jason's arm on my waist jerked me back. Anita, you can't sleep in the bathtub, you'll drown. You won't let me drown, I said, and my voice was thick with warmth and sleep. No, I won't let you drown, he said. I frowned as I half-floated in the water. What's wrong with me, Jason? I feel drunk. You have been well and truly rolled by a vampire, Anita. Jean-Claude, can his own marks protect me? My voice seemed to be coming from a long way away. I never said it was Jean-Claude. Asher, I whispered the name. I've shared blood with him before, and it's the most amazing thing. Jean-Claude says he always holds back because he knows I'm not his pomme de sang. I'm just a loner. Loner, I said. I don't think Asher held back with you tonight. The ardeur, we were doing the ardeur. Each word was thick with effort. The ardeur could have made him careless, Jason said. His hands were very solid on me, cradling me in the water more than against his body. Careless, I said. Go ahead and pass out, Anita. When you wake up, we'll talk. About what? Things, he said, and his voice was sinking away into the candlelit dark. I didn't remember him lighting the candles that Jean-Claude usually kept around the tub. I started to ask, what things? But the words never made it out loud. I fell into a warm, soft darkness, where there was no fear, no pain. So warm, so safe, so loved. Chapter 15. I woke to the phone ringing. I huddled in the sheets, trying not to hear it. God, I was tired. The bed moved, someone else fumbling for it. It wasn't until Jason's voice said, hello, softly, as if he were afraid of waking me, that I woke completely. Why was Jason in my bedroom? That question was answered as soon as I opened my eyes. I wasn't in my bedroom. In fact, I didn't know where the hell I was. The bed was a king size, but it was only pillows and a bed, no headboard, no footboard, only a bed, very modern, very normal. The only light was from a small door directly across from the foot of the bed. I could catch a glimpse of a bathtub or shower. I followed the dim light out and found bare stone walls and knew I was still inside the circus of the damned, somewhere. She's sick, Jason said. He was quiet for a second. She's asleep. I'd rather not wake her. I tried to remember why I was here and came up with nothing, just blank. I started to roll over. I think to ask who it was when I realized I was naked. I pulled the sheets up over my breasts and turned over to see Jason. He was laying on his side, his back to me, the sheet pulled down enough that I could see the top of his buttocks. What the fuck was I doing naked in a bed with Jason? Where was Jean-Claude? Okay, probably in his coffin or his bed. I never shared the bed when he was stone cold. But why hadn't I gone home? I don't think she's going to be well enough to come out today. I tried to sit up and found that the world wasn't quite steady. Maybe sitting up wasn't such a good idea. I stayed on my back, sheet clutched to my chest, and I had to try twice to say, "I'm awake." My mouth was incredibly dry. Jason turned towards me. The movement pulled the sheet into his lap and left the backside of his body bare. He covered the receiver with his hand. "How do you feel?" "How did I get here? Why am I here?" I asked in a voice so hoarse it barely sounded like me. "Do you remember anything?" I frowned, and that hurt. My throat hurt. I raised a hand and found a large bandage on the right side of my neck. There was a vampire bite under the bandages. I knew that, and with that knowledge, I remembered. I remembered everything, and it wasn't just my mind that remembered it. My body convulsed against the bed, my spine bowing, hands clawing at the sheets. A moan tore from my throat before the body stole all breath from me, and I bucked against the bed, caught in a sensory memory. It wasn't as good as the original, but damn, it was close. I dug my fists into the sheets, balling the cloth up, trying to find something to hold on to. Jason was suddenly beside me. He grabbed my upper arms, tried to hold me still. "Anita, what's wrong?" My hands came up, automatically grabbing his forearms, holding on. My eyes rolled back into my head. My body convulsed, and my hands tore down his forearms. I felt my nails sink into his flesh, felt his skin give underneath me. Jason cried out, somewhere between a scream and a moan. I laid back against the bed, panting, eyes unable to focus. I held onto Jason's arms because it was the only solid thing I had. "Anita," he said, his voice strained. "Are you all right?" I tried to say yes, but finally was reduced to nodding. He pried my fingers from his arms gently, folding my hands across the sheet in my stomach. I felt the bed move as he moved. I realized my eyes were shut. I didn't remember shutting them. "What the hell was that?" he asked. I started to say, but I didn't know. But I did know. I remembered Asher sitting at a long banquet table with his hair and golden ringlets, dressed in gold and crimson. The wife of our host crushed her wine glass in her gloved hand, her mouth half parted, her breath making the white mounds of her breasts rise and fall. A small sound escaped her, and when she could speak, she asked for her maid and to be helped to her room, for she was ill. She wasn't ill. Asher had seduced her the night before on Belle's orders. He had complained to Jean-Claude that the woman simply lay there, eyes rolled back in her head. True, but with almost no other reaction. It had been most disappointing. She'd experienced a flashback of the orgasm the night before at the dinner table, but she was a quiet sex partner, which meant that her flashbacks could be explained away in public, sort of. I lay there, staring up at Jason, seeing him now instead of candle-lit rooms long deserted and people long gone to dust. I found my voice, and it was more hoarse than it had been before, as if the screaming had taken the rest of my voice. "It was a flashback," I coughed. "To what?" he asked. "Water, please." He hopped off the bed and knelt by a small refrigerator next to the bed. He got out a small bottle of some athletic juicer. "It helps replace the electrolytes better than water." "I don't like this shit." "Trust me, you'll feel better if you drink it than if you drink water. Water can make you nauseous." Suddenly, the neon blue drink looked a whole lot better. He opened it and handed it to me. Blood had filled the scratches on his forearms and was slowly seeping down his skin in red rivulets. "Jesus, Jason, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you up." I took a sip of the neon-bright liquid. The taste was as bad as I remembered, but a few small sips, and I did feel a little better. When I talked, my voice didn't sound like I'd been in the desert for a month. He held his arms up. "It's okay, though normally, when I get this cut up, it's because I did a wonderful job entertaining a friend." He smiled. I shook my head, and I wasn't dizzy this time. Good. "You said this was a flashback." "Flashback to what?" he asked. "To what happened with Jean-Claude and Asher." He raised eyebrows at me. "You mean that was a flashback to what? The orgasm?" I felt heat creep up my face. "Something like that," I muttered. He laughed. "You're joking." "I don't think so." I drank some more of that vile drink and avoided looking at him. "I've served as refreshment for Jean-Claude for years, and I've never had any reaction like that." "It's something Asher can do." "What?" he asked. "You're bleeding all over the place," I said. "I'll doctor myself in a minute. First, I want you to finish this explanation." "You know, Asher's bite can be... Orgasmic? He finished for me. Yeah, I said. I've experienced the mild version of it, Jason said. So have you once in Tennessee when Asher was dying. He rolled your mind. If I remember right, you didn't like it much. It wasn't that I didn't like it, Jason. It was that I liked it maybe too much. So yeah, it scared me. Jean-Claude said that Asher always holds back unless he can keep the person, whatever that means. I nodded, took a drink, nodded again. I know that Asher didn't hold back last night. How do you know? He asked. I've got some of Jean-Claude's memories. I'm reacting like a woman that Belle had Asher seduce once. Acting how? He asked. Slicing people up? I said I was sorry. He sat down on the edge of the bed, one knee tucked up, the other down, so that he was pretty much flaunting himself at me. Generally, I don't have trouble making eye contact with a man, but it was sort of eye-catching. I'm just teasing, Anita. He seemed totally unaware of his nudity, like most of the shapeshifters I knew. I handed him an edge of sheet. Please cover up a little. He grinned. Why? We've slept for... He glanced at the bedside clock. 4 hours naked together. Why should I dress now? I frowned at him, and suddenly it was easy to have eye contact. It usually is when I glare. How are you acting like this other woman? He asked. Echoes, flashbacks to the pleasure that happened when Asher took blood. Is that going to keep happening? He asked. I blushed again. Off and on. Fuck. What? He asked. The woman I'm remembering was quiet in bed. She didn't jump around a lot, not according to Asher. So? She could hide it better than I can. He laughed out loud. Are you telling me that all this jumping around is normal for you? I glared back at him. You should know. You've seen me in bed once. You helped bring me, remember? I was blushing so hard my head was beginning to hurt. His smile faded. It had taken me months to be comfortable around Jason after that. The ardor was riding all of us, he said. We were all a little jumpier than usual. I shook my head, not looking at him, tucking my knees in the sheet to my chest. Except for wanting to tear out your throat, that was about normal for me. He coughed, laughed, and finally said, No way. I kept my eyes firmly on the sheets. Fine, make fun. He took the bottle from me. I need a drink. I hugged my knees to my chest, huddling in the sheet. You are so not funny. He slid to his knees beside the bed, so I'd see his face. I'm sorry, really, but... He gave a small shrug. You can't blame me. You cannot tell me that you have these violent, amazing orgasms, then expect me not to tease you. It's me, Anita. You know, I can't really help it. He looked so boyish, so innocent. It was all an act. By the time I'd met Jason, he'd been ridden hard and put up wet, and his innocence had been long gone. He handed the drink back to me. Forgive me, okay? Maybe it's just envy. Don't go there, I said. Not of you, he said. But hell, if Asher's bite is that good, why didn't I get the full treatment? I tried to frown at him and only half succeeded. You said it yourself. You're not his pomme de sang. You're only a loner. And you're Jean-Claude's human servant, not Asher's. So why do you rate the full orgasmic blowout? He had a point. A good point. I shrugged. I think the ardor overrode things. I don't know. I guess I'll have to ask them when they wake up. Why would Asher do this to me? Had it been on purpose? I knew only Asher could do this with the mere taking of blood, what most men couldn't do with their whole bodies. Asher had done something to me that Jean-Claude alone couldn't duplicate. The memory of it tightened my body, and I had just enough time to shove the bottle at Jason before I threw myself back on the bed. It wasn't as violent as the last time, and Jason made no move to try and touch me. I guess he'd gotten enough scratches. When I was done, panting on the bed, with the sheet down around my stomach and my vision clearing, Jason asked from the far side of the bed, Is it safe now? Shut up, I managed. He laughed and bounced back on the bed. He raised me up with one hand and offered the bottle with the other. Lean against the pillows, drink this slowly. I'm going to put some bandages on my arms. Antiseptic cream, too, I said. I'm a werewolf, Anita. I don't get infections. Oh, fine. Then why bother with the bandages at all? I don't want to bleed all over my clothes, and I can't let the police see me like this. Police? Why police?
Well, that was who was on the phone when you woke up. That's who's been calling for about the last hour. Lieutenant Storr and Detective Zerbrowski have both called. They've requested your presence. The lieutenant made noises about coming to find you and drag you out of my bed.
How did he know I was in your bed?
He grinned at me in the door of the bathroom, opening it wide so the light framed his body.
I don't know. Maybe he guessed.
Jason, you didn't tease Dolph. Please tell me you didn't.
He put a hand to his chest.
Me? Tease someone?
Sweet Jesus, you did.
I'd call him back ASAP if I were you. I'd hate to have the SWAT team crash our little party.
We are not having a party.
I don't think your lieutenant friend will believe you if he finds us naked in the bedroom together.
He held his arms up, especially if he sees this.
He's not going to see your arms or any other part of you. Just give me my clothes and I'll get out of your hair.
And if you have another flashback while you're driving, what then?
And just let me add that I've been donating blood to vampires a lot longer than you have. I know how hard it can be when you lose as much as you lost. You may feel fine, but if you overdo it, you'll get dizzy again and nauseous. That wouldn't be good at a crime scene, would it?
Dolph does not let civilians at his crime scenes.
I'll just sit in the Jeep. But I can't let you drive yourself around today.
Call Micah or Nathaniel. They'll come pick me up.
He shook his head. Nathaniel passed out at the club last night.
What?
Micah thinks that feeding the ardour at least once a day for 3 months is taking its toll on Nathaniel.
Is he all right?
He just needs a day off. Jean-Claude only takes blood from me every other day, usually.
I switch off with Micah and Jean-Claude for the ardour, I said.
Yeah, but Jean-Claude only needs to feed once a day. You need to feed twice a day. Let's face it, Anita, you need a larger stable of pomme de sang.
What, you volunteering?
An expression of delight crossed his face.
Oh, hell yes. I'd love to be on the receiving end of one of those spine-cracking orgasms.
Jason, I said, and that one word was warning enough.
Fine, be that way. But who else are you going to put in Nathaniel's place while he recovers?
I sighed.
Damn it.
See, you don't know, do you?
I can feed on Asher now.
Yes, but he's not going to wake up for hours and hours. You need some more day-walking donors, Anita. It doesn't have to be me, but it has to be somebody. Think about it. But today, I am your escort. Because you can't go out alone. Not with the blood loss. And whatever the hell Asher did to you. You could call Micah, but by the time you drove out here and the two of you drove out to wherever the police want you to be, I think your police friends would be having fits.
Fine, you've made your point.
Have I?
It's always so hard to tell with you. Sometimes I think I've won the argument, then you get a second wind and beat me all to hell with it.
Just go, Jason, put some bandages on those scrapes.
Scrapes, hell. If I were human, you'd be taking me to the emergency room.
Remember, Anita, you have some of the strength of both a vampire and a werewolf. We can punch our finger through someone's ribs.
Are you really hurt?
I asked, all joking aside. I didn't want to hurt him.
Not permanently, but I'll heal almost human slow.
I'm sorry, Jason. I remembered enough to say, and thanks for taking care of me.
His grin faded, and something close to a serious look spilled through his eyes. Then it was gone, hidden behind another smile.
All in a day's work, ma'am. He tipped an imaginary hat and started to shut the door.
I'd turn on the lamp before I closed the door. It's damn dark without windows.
I reached over and switched on a small lamp beside the clock, on top of the little refrigerator. The glow seemed unnaturally bright.
Your cell phone is on the floor on my side of the bed. I dropped it when you started convulsing.
I was not convulsing, I said.
Oh, sorry. I dropped it when you had your raging, overwhelming, screaming orgasm. Was that better?
It sounded better, didn't it?
Go clean up, I said, sounding grumpy when I said it. He was laughing as he closed the door. I was left alone with the little lamp, the big bed, and no clothes in sight. I was about to debate on whether to try and find some clothes before hunting up my phone, when it rang again. I scrambled across the bed, jerking the sheets off so they wouldn't tangle me. I half slid, half fell to the floor and found my phone by sitting on it. It was Dolph, and he wasn't happy. While he'd been waiting for me, there had been a second call to a second crime scene. He was pissed with Jason's antics on the phone, with both crime scenes and especially, it seemed, with me.
Chapter 16. The first crime scene was in Wildwood, that new bastion of money and social climbing. The hot addresses used to be Ladue, Clayton, Creve Coeur, but they've all become passé. Nope, the hot new place to be is Wildwood. The fact that it's in the middle of freaking nowhere doesn't seem to dissuade the nouveau riche or the wannabe rich. Personally, the only reason I lived in the middle of nowhere, at a much less fashionable address, was the fact that I didn't want to get my neighbors shot up. By the time Jason had driven through all the windy roads that led to the murder scene, we'd found out several things. First, my eyes were light-sensitive, so my sunglasses were my friends. Second, my stomach didn't like twisting roads. We had to stop so I could throw up, which was good, since unless we pulled into someone's drive, there was no shoulder to the road. It was bordered by woods, hills, tame wilderness, where the real wolves no longer roam, and even the black bears have found deeper holes to hide in. Normally, I love a drive through the country. Today, all the bright greens meant was that when my vision swirled, it did it in technicolor green, like a frog, which actually made the nausea worse. "How can you endure this?" I asked. "If you'd slept the day away like a normal Palme de Sang or a human servant, you wouldn't be sick at all. Forgive me for having a day job. Also, if Asher had taken enough for just a feeding, then you might be a bit sick," he negotiated a turn. "But I think that whatever Asher did to you, along with taking blood, made it worse." He paused. "Truthfully, you shouldn't be this sick at all." We crested the rise and the soft hills stretched out for miles, shades of green with a hint of gold here and there. "At least I'm not nauseous anymore when I look at the trees." "That's good, but I mean it, Anita. After you've slept and then gotten up and around, you should have been fine." He took the next curve carefully, a lot slower than he'd taken the first one. "So what went wrong?" I asked. He shrugged and slowed even further, trying to see the address on the cluster of mailboxes. "Dolph said the crime scene was on the main road. You wouldn't miss it, Jason." "How can you be sure?" "Trust me." He flashed me another grin, his own blue eyes hidden behind mirrored sunglasses. "I do trust you." "What went wrong?" I asked again. "Well, what were you doing when dawn broke?" he asked, speeding back up and taking the next curve a little faster than I would have liked. "The ardour. Asher was feeding, and I hesitated only for a second." "Having sex?" "With both of them at once?" he said, voice mock serious. "I am so disappointed in you, Anita." "Disappointed? Why?" "That I wasn't invited." "Oh, you're so lucky that you're driving right now." He grinned, but didn't turn away from the road this time. "Why do you think I said it while I was driving?" he slowed. "I see what you mean about not missing it." I turned my attention from Jason's face to the road. Police cars, marked and unmarked, were everywhere. Two emergency vehicles were parked on the edge of the road, which effectively blocked traffic. If we'd been planning to drive further on, we'd have had to find another way around. But lucky us, we were stopping here. Jason pulled the Jeep over, driving onto the grass in a vain attempt to leave some space for anyone else that might be coming behind us. A uniformed officer started walking towards us before Jason turned off the engine. I got my badge out of my suit jack pocket. I, Anita Blake, vampire executioner, was technically a federal marshal. All vampire hunters that were currently state-licensed in the United States had been grandfathered in to federal status, if they could qualify on a shooting range. I'd qualified, and I was now a Fed. There were still arguing in Washington, D.C. about whether they'd be able to give us anything more than the pittance that each state pays us per kill, which is not enough so you could afford to do it as a day job. But then, luckily, the vampires hadn't gotten so out of hand that any state needed a vampire hunter full-time. I wasn't getting any more money, so why had I wanted the badge? Because it meant that I could chase the vampires or other supernatural bad guys across state lines, different law enforcement jurisdictions, and did not have to ask anyone's permission. I also wouldn't be up on murder charges if I killed a vamp on the wrong side of a state line where I wasn't licensed. But for me, more than most vampire hunters, there was an extra benefit to having a badge of my very own. I no longer had to rely on policeman friends to get me into crime scenes. I didn't know the uniformed officer that was about to knock on our Jeep window, but it didn't matter. He couldn't keep me out of the crime scene. I was a federal marshal, I could stick my nose into any preternaturally related crime I wanted to. A real federal marshal could have intruded into any investigation. And technically my badge didn't specify that I was relegated to preternatural crime. But I know my limitations. I know monsters and monster-related crime. A regular cop, I am not. What I'm good at, I'm very good at. But what I don't know shit about, I don't know shit about. Take me away from the monsters, and I wasn't sure how much use I'd be. I was out of the jeep and flashing my badge before the uniform got to us. He sized me up the way men will do from shoes to face, in that order. Any man who starts at my feet and then goes up has pretty much lost any chance he has to impress me. I read his name tag. Officer Jenkins. I'm Anita Blake. Lieutenant Storr is expecting me. Storr is in here, he said, arms crossed over his chest. Great. He didn't recognize my name. So much for being a celebrity. And he was going to play Don't Want the Feds Pissing in My Pond. Jason had gotten out of his side of the jeep. Maybe I looked a little disreputable in my slightly wrinkled suit, with a run in my hose that went from toe to thigh. But Jason didn't look like a fed or a cop. He was dressed in blue jeans that had faded through enough washings to be comfortable. A blue t-shirt that almost matched his eyes, still hidden behind the mirrored shades, and white jogging shoes. It had turned out to be one of those unusually warm fall days we get sometimes. Too warm for his leather jacket, so he hadn't bothered with anything else. The white gauze and tape on his forearms were very noticeable. He leaned on the hood of the jeep, smiling pleasantly and looking so not like a federal anything. Officer Jenkins' eyes flicked to Jason, then back to me. We didn't call the feds in. Standing there in my 3-inch heels on the slightly uneven road was making me feel lightheaded again. I did not have the patience or the strength to debate. Officer Jenkins, I'm a federal marshal. Do you know what that means?
Nope, he said, making the word longer than it was.
It means that I don't need your permission to enter this crime scene. I don't need anybody's permission, so it doesn't matter if Lieutenant is here or not. I told you who alerted me to the crime out of courtesy, but if you don't want to be courteous, officer, then we don't have to be. I turned and looked at Jason. Normally I would have left him at the car, but I wasn't 100% sure I could make it up the rest of the hill without falling over. I genuinely didn't feel well enough to be here, but here I was, and I was going to see this crime scene. I motioned Jason to me. He came around the jeep, his smile fading around the edges. Maybe I looked as pale as I felt. Let's go. He's not a fed, Jenkins said. I had enough of Jenkins. If I'd been feeling better, I would have bullied our way through. But there were other ways to bully. I waited until Jason was there to steady me. Then I moved my hair to one side, showing the white gauze and tape on my own neck. I pulled on one side of the tape until it peeled down, and I could flash the bite at Jenkins. It wasn't a neat puncture wound. Asher had gotten carried away because the edges of the wounds were torn.
Shit, Jenkins said.
I let Jason tape the wound back up while I talked to the other man. I've had a hard night, Officer Jenkins, and I have the authority to go into any preternaturally related crime scene I see fit to enter. The tape was smoothed back into place, and Jason was standing very close to my left arm, as if he knew how unsteady I was feeling. Jenkins didn't seem to notice.
It isn't a vampire attack, Jenkins said.
Am I not speaking English here, Jenkins? Did I say it had anything to do with vampires?
No, sir. I mean, no.
Then either escort us to the crime scene, officer, or step aside and we'll find our own way. Flashing the vampire bite had thrown him, but he still didn't want a fed messing with his crime. Probably his boss wouldn't like it, but that wasn't my problem. I had a federal badge. In theory, I had the right to the crime scene. In actuality, if the local police barred my way, there wasn't much I could do. I could go get a court order and force the issue, but that would take time, and I didn't have that kind of time. Dolph was already pissed at me. I didn't want to keep him waiting that long. Jenkins finally stepped aside. We started walking up the hill. I had to take Jason's arm about halfway up. My goal in life for that moment was not to fall down, throw up, or faint, while Jenkins was still puzzling over whether he'd done the right thing by letting us get past him.
Chapter 17. My badge on its little cord around my neck got us past most of the cops. The few that questioned us recognized my name or had worked with me before. Always good to be known. They'd questioned Jason's presence. I finally told them that I deputized him. A big statey with shoulders wider than either of us was tall, said,
I've heard it called a lot of things, but deputy isn't one of them.
I turned on him, slowly, because I couldn't move fast. And the very slowness of the turn helped the menace. It's hard to be menacing to someone when you barely reach their waist. But I have had lots of practice. Jason must have been afraid of what I'd say, because he said, You're just jealous. The big man shook his head in his Smokey the Bear hat. I like my women bigger. Funny, I said. That's what your wife says. It took him a minute to get it. Then he unfolded those beefy arms and took a step towards us. Why, you... Trooper Kennedy, a voice said from behind us. Don't you have some speeders to catch? I turned to see Zerbowski walking towards us. He was dressed in his usual, sloppy as hell, as if he'd slept in the brown suit, a yellow shirt with the collar on one side pointing up, and a tie at half-mast, already stained with something, even though he probably hadn't had breakfast. His wife, Katie, was always neat as a pin. I'd never figured out how she let him go out looking like that.
I'm on my own time here, Detective, Trooper Kennedy said.
And this is my crime scene, Trooper. I don't think we need you here. She says that she deputized him.
She's a federal marshal, Kennedy. She can do that.
The big man looked perplexed. I didn't mean anything by the comment, sir.
I know you didn't, Kennedy. Just as Marshal Blake here didn't mean anything by hers. Did you, Anita?
I don't know his wife, so no. Just pulling your leg, Officer Kennedy. Sorry about that. Kennedy frowned, thinking harder than was good for him, I think. No offense taken, and none meant, ma'am. He couldn't quite bring himself to call me officer or marshal, which was fine with me. The federal status was so new that I didn't always look up when someone called marshal. I kept forgetting they meant me. When the big trooper had wandered away to his car, Zabrowski called over one of the other detectives on the regional preternatural investigation team, affectionately known as RPIT. If you wanted to piss them off, call them R.I.P.
See if you can clear out some of the personnel we don't need.
You got it, Sarge.
And the man went to talk with all the nice policemen from all the many jurisdictions.
Sarge, I said.
I knew Dolph made lieutenant finally. I didn't hear your news. He shrugged, running a hand through his already messy curls. Katie would make him go in for a haircut soon.
When they moved Dolph up, they needed a second whip. I got tapped.
They throw you a party yet? He adjusted his wire-rimmed glasses. They didn't need adjusting.
Yeah.
If I'd have been a man, I'd have let it go. But I was a girl, and girls poke at things more than men.
I was invited to Dolph's party for making Louie, but not yours.
I like Micah, Anita, but Dolph... Didn't expect you to bring Micah. I don't think he could take seeing him at my shindig, too.
He just can't handle the fact that my main squeeze is a shapeshifter.
Zabrowski shrugged.
Katie gave me strict orders to invite you and Micah over for dinner the next time I saw you. So here it is. When can you come over?
There are points where you stop pushing. I didn't ask if Katie had really told Zabrowski that. She probably had. But whatever. He was trying to offer a social peace pipe, and I was going to take it. I'll ask Micah what our schedule looks like. His eyes flicked to Jason and he grinned. The grin reminded me so much of Jason's grin that it made me wonder what Zabrowski had been like in college, when Katie and he met.
Unless you've changed guys again.
No, I said. Jason's just a friend.
A friend speech.
Jason clutched his heart with his free hand, the other still wrapped around mine.
It cuts so deep.
Yeah, I've been trying to get in her pants for years. She just won't come across.
Tell me about it, Jason said.
Both of you stop it, right now, I said. They both laughed, and the laughs were so similar that it was kind of unnerving.
I know you have the right to make him a deputy, but I know what Mr. Schuyler here is, and where his primary residence is.
Zabrowski leaned in close enough to us that no one else would hear. Dolph would kill me if I let him into the crime scene.
You catch me if I pass out, and he can stay out here.
Pass out?
Zabrowski said. You're joking, right?
I wish I was.
I had both hands on Jason's arm now, fighting the urge to totter on my high heels.
Dolph said that you'd said you were sick.
Did he know how sick?
He didn't seem to care. He just wanted me to get my ass out here.
Zabrowski frowned. If he'd have known you were the shaky, he wouldn't have insisted.
Pretty to think so, I said. I could feel the blood draining from my face. I needed to sit down, soon, just for a few minutes.
I would ask if it's a flu, but I can see the bandage on your neck.
What did it?
Vampire, I said.
You want to report a crime?
It's been taken care of.
You kill his ass?
I looked at him through the dark lenses of the glasses. I really need to sit down for a few minutes, Zabrowski, and you know I wouldn't ask if I didn't need it.
He offered me his arm.
I'll escort you through, but Skylar here can't come. He looked at Jason.
Sorry, man.
Jason shrugged. It's okay. I'm really good at entertaining myself.
Behave yourself, I said. He grinned.
Don't I always?
I would have stayed there and made sure he promised me how good he would be, but I had only about enough energy to walk into the house and sit down before my legs gave. I'd leave the police officers and emergency crews to Jason's mercy. He wouldn't do anything bad, just irritating. I stumbled on the steps leading up to the small front porch. If Zabrowski hadn't caught me, I'd have fallen.
Jesus, Anita, you should be in bed.
That's what I told Dolph. He eased me through the door and found me a small straight-back chair in the hallway. I'll tell Dolph how sick you are here and let the kid take you home.
No, I said, though I did lay my forehead on my knees while the world steadied around me.
Jesus, Anita, you're as stubborn as he is. Dolph won't take no for an answer, so you drag your ass out of a sick bed to come down here. I give you an out, or I'll take the heat from Dolph, but no, you're going to show Dolph that you're just as stubborn, as bullheaded as he is. You planning to faint in his arms? That'll really show him.
Shut up, Zabrowski.
Fine, you sit here for a few minutes. I'll come back and check on you, and I'll escort you through the crime scene. But you're being stupid.
I spoke with my face still in my lap.
If Dolph were sick, he'd still be here.
That doesn't prove you're right, Anita. Just proves that you're both stupid.
With that, he walked away, farther into the house. It was good that he left, because for the life of me, I couldn't have argued with him.
Chapter 18. When Zabrowski first led me into the room, I thought, there's a man levitating against that wall. He did look like he was floating. I knew that wasn't true. But for just a moment, my eyes, my mind, tried to make that what I saw. Then I saw the dark lines where blood had dried on the body. It looked as if he'd been shot, a lot, and bled, but bullets wouldn't have kept him pinned to the wall. Strangely, I wasn't faint or nauseous or anything. I felt light and distant and more solid than I'd felt in hours. I kept walking towards the man on the wall. Zabrowski's hand slipped away from mine, and I was steady on my high heels in the soft carpet. I had to be almost underneath the body before my eyes could make sense of it, and even then I was going to have to ask someone who was more tool-oriented if I was right. It looked like someone had taken a nail gun, one of those industrial-sized nail guns, and nailed the man to the wall. His shoulders were about 8 feet off the ground, so either they'd used a ladder, or they'd been close to 7 feet tall. The dark spots on the body were at both palms, both wrists, forearms, just above the elbows, shoulders, collarbones, lower legs just below the knees, just above the ankles, then through each foot. The legs were apart, not pierced together. They hadn't tried to imitate the crucifixion. If you went to this much trouble, it was almost odd not to echo that long-ago drama. The very fact that they hadn't tried seemed strange to me. The man's head slumped forward. His neck showed pale and whole. There was a dark patch of blood on his nearly white hair, just behind one ear. If the nails were as big as I thought they were, if that blood had been caused by a nail, the tip should have protruded from the face, but it didn't. I stood on tiptoe. I wanted to see the face. The white hair and the face, black with death, said he was older than the rest of him looked. The body was well cared for. Exercise, probably weights, running. Only the face and white hair said he was probably over 50. All that work to maintain health and well-being, and some nutcase comes along and nails you to a wall.
It seems so unfair. I leaned forward too far and had to put my fingertips out to catch myself. My fingers touched dried blood on the wall. Only then did I realize I'd forgotten my surgical gloves. Fuck. Zebrowski was there with a hand on my elbow to steady me, whether I needed it or not. How could you let me come in here without gloves on? I didn't expect you to touch the evidence, he said. He fished a bottle of hand sanitizer out of one of his pockets. Katie makes me carry it. I let him pour some onto my hands, and I scrubbed them. It wasn't that I was really worried about catching anything from that one small touch. I did it more out of habit. You didn't take pieces of the crime scene home if you didn't have to. The gel evaporated against my skin, making my hands feel wet, though I knew they weren't. I looked around at the crime scene, taking in what else was there. Colored chalk had been used on the off-white walls. There were pentagrams of varying sizes on either side of the body. Pink, blue, red, green. Almost decorative. Any fool that's trying to fake a ritual murder knows enough to use a few pentagrams. But there were also Nordic runes drawn among the candy-colored pentagrams. Not every nutcase knows that Nordic runes can be used in ritual magic. I had one semester of comparative religion with a professor who had really liked the Norse. It had left me with a better knowledge of runes than most Christians had. It had been years, but I still recognized enough to be confused. This makes no sense, I said. What? Zebrowski asked. I pointed at the wall while I spoke. It's been a while since I studied runes in college. But the perps used all the runes in a pretty standard order. If you're really doing ritual, you have a specific purpose. You don't use all the Norse runes, because some of them are contradictory. I mean, you don't want to use a rune for chaos and a rune for order. I can't think of a true ritual where you would use them all. Even if you were doing a working, where you wanted to invoke polarity, healing, harming, chaos, order, god, goddess, you still wouldn't. Some of them aren't easily made to fit any true polarity opposite sort of thing. And they're also in a pretty standard textbook order. I backed up, taking him with me, because he was still holding onto my elbow. I pointed to the left side of the body as we looked at it. It starts with Fehu, here, and descends straight through, ending with Thagaz, at the other side. Someone just copied this, Zebrowski. I know this sounds funky, but do you feel any magic? He asked. I thought about that. Do you mean was this a spell? He nodded. Yeah. Can you feel a spell? No, there's been nothing of power in this room. How can you be so sure? He asked. Magic, power of any kind of a metaphysical nature, leaves a residue behind. Sometimes it's just a tingling at the back of your neck, goosebumps on your skin, but sometimes it's like a slap in the face, or even a wall that you run into. But this room is dead, Zebrowski. I'm not psychically gifted enough to pick up emotions from what happened here, and I'm glad. But if this had been some big spell, there'd be something left of it, and the room is just a crime scene, nothing else. So if no spell, why all the symbols? He asked. I haven't the faintest idea. From the looks of things, he was shot behind the ear and nailed to the wall. The body isn't arranged to imitate any mystical or religious symbolism that I'm familiar with. Then they threw some pentagrams around and copied runes out of a book. Which book? There are a lot of books on the runes. Everything from college textbooks to the occult to New Age. You'd probably have to go to a college store or one of the New Age shops. Or you could probably special order it through any bookstore. So this isn't a ritual murder? He said. There may be ritual to it from the killer's point of view. But was it done with magical purpose? No. He let out a deep breath. Good. That's what Reynolds told Dolph. Detective Tammy Reynolds, your one and only witch on staff? I asked. He nodded. Why didn't Dolph believe her? He said he wanted confirmation. I shook my head, and it didn't make me dizzy to do it. Great. He doesn't trust her, does he? Zebrowski shrugged. Dolph's just careful. Bull-fucking-shit, Zebrowski. He doesn't trust her because she's a witch. She's a Christian witch, for heaven's sakes, a follower of the way. You can't get more mainstream in your occult expert than a Christian witch. Hey, don't get mad at me. I didn't drag you out of your bed to double-check Reynolds' work. And would he have dragged her down here to check my work if I'd been first on the scene? You'd have to ask Dolph about that. Maybe I will, I said.
Zabrowski went a little pale.
Anita, please don't go after Dolph angry. He is in a bad, bad mood.
Why? He shrugged again.
Dolph doesn't confide in me.
Is he just in a bad mood today, or for the last few days? What?
The last few days have been worse, but two murders in one night have sort of given him a reason to be grumpy, and he's taken full advantage of it.
Great. Just great, I said. My anger helped me stomp off towards the bank of windows that took up most of the other wall. I stood there and stared off at the amazing view. Nothing but hills, trees. It did look as if the house sat in the middle of some vast wilderness.
Zabrowski came to stand beside me. Nice view, huh?
Whoever did this had to have scouted the house. I motioned at the windows. They had to know for sure that there was no neighbor out there that could see what they were doing. Shooting him, you might take your chances, but putting him up on a wall and all the symbols? No, they had to be sure they wouldn't be seen.
That's pretty organized for a wacko, Zabrowski said.
Not if it's really someone wanting you to think they're a wacko.
What do you mean?
Don't tell me that you and Dolph haven't thought of that.
What?
That it's someone near and dear to the dead man, someone who stands to inherit all this? I looked around at the living room, which was as large as the entire downstairs of my house. I was too sick to really notice when I came in, but if the rest of the house is as impressive as this, then there's money to be had.
You haven't seen the pool yet, have you?
Pool? Indoors, with a jacuzzi big enough for 12. I sighed. Like I said, money. Follow the money, find out who stands to gain. The ritual is only window dressing, a smokescreen that the murderers hope will throw you off. He stood staring off at the beautiful view, hands behind his back, sort of rocking on his heels.
You're right. That's exactly what Dolph thought once Reynolds said there was no magic to it.
I'm not going over to the other scene just to check her work again, am I? Because if that's the case, I'm headed home. I may not always like Detective Tammy, but she's good at what she does.
You just don't like that she's dating Larry Kirkland, your animator in training.
No, I don't like that she and Larry are dating. She's his first serious girlfriend, so forgive me, but I felt protective.
Funny, I don't feel protective of Reynolds at all.
That's because you're weird, Zabrowski.
No, he said. It's because I see the way Reynolds and Kirkland look at each other. They're dead gone, Anita, in L-O-V-E.
I sighed. Maybe.
If you hadn't noticed, it's because you didn't want to see it.
Maybe I've been busy. For once, Zabrowski stayed quiet. I looked at him. You never answered my first question. Am I going to the next murder scene to check Tammy's work? He stopped rocking on his heels and stood quiet, face serious.
I don't know. Probably so.
I'm going home, then. He touched my arm.
Go to the second scene, Anita, please. Don't give Dolph any more reason to be more pissy.
That's not my problem, Zabrowski. Dolph is making his own life hard on this one.
I know, but the couple officers that have been at both scenes say the second one is bad one. More up your alley than Reynolds.
Up my alley? How?
Violent. Real violent. Dolph doesn't want to know if it's magic. He wants to know if something that wasn't human did it.
Dolph's a fanatic about not giving away details to his people before they've seen a crime scene, Zabrowski. What you've just told me would piss him off mightily.
I was afraid you wouldn't go if I didn't.
Add a little. Why do you care if Dolph and I are feuding?
We're here to solve crimes, Anita, not fight each other. I don't know what's eating Dolph, but one of you has to be the grown-up.
He smiled.
Yeah, I know things have come to a sorry state when you're the one. But there it is.
I shook my head and slapped his arm. You're such a pain in the ass, Zabrowski.
It's good to be appreciated, he said.
The anger was fading, and with it the spurt of energy. I leaned my head against his shoulder.
Get me outside before I start feeling bad again. I'll go see the second crime scene.
He put his arm around my shoulders and gave me half a hug.
That's my little federal marshal.
I raised my head. Don't push it, Zabrowski.
Can't help myself. Sorry.
I sighed. You're right. You can't help yourself. Forget I said anything. Keep saying witty, irritating things as you walk me back to Jason. He started me across the room, arms still across my shoulders.
How did you end up with a werewolf stripper as your driver for the day?
Just lucky, I guess.
Chapter 19.